Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the March 16th Board of Supervisors meeting. If you'd all please join me and rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
You say with me, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda, please.
We have an added item to closed session, pending litigation, a conference with legal counsel in the Pomo Community Services District versus County of San Luis Obispo. We have conference with real property negotiator, property description 840 West Branch Street in Arroyo Grande, with Bob Dougherty, American Star Trailways. Instructions to negotiator, price, terms, and conditions. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. And just a little bit of trivia information. On March 16, 1837, the Freedom's Journal was first published as the first U.S. black newspaper. There you go. Moving into the consent calendar, I have a few requests to speak on the consent. I have Mr. Dick Desmond for A3, please. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm Dick Desmond. I'm a Arroyo Grande resident. I thought I'd fill you in a little bit this morning on the black bear situation in this county that you have before you today. I was one of a group representing hundreds of voters in this county that asked the Fish and Game Commission to consider the possibility of including San Luis Obispo County in the statewide black bear hunting. We didn't know if there was a viable population of bears in this county. We had no idea because there had been no studies. We merely realized that we were one of a few counties out of the 52 in California who weren't included. The vast majority were. So we asked the department to look into that, and the commission agreed, and they've done some studies over the past 4 years, which we helped them with, photographing bears, charting bears, and in-depth study of the bear population in this county. The experts at the Department of Fish and Game have come to the recommendation that they should include San Luis Obispo County in the bear season. And for the reasons being that the bear population in the state has quadrupled over the last 25 years, and that the population in this county continues to expand. The initial study 3 years ago, they thought they had a viable population. Since then, they've continued to study, and they've come up with even more bears in this county. They are, by law, required to provide additional hunting opportunities where feasible in the state. They feel at this point that with the population of the bears in this county, that it is feasible to include the county in the bear season. Now, there is a big hang-up with the bear hunting issue because of the use of dogs. I'm here to tell you that dogs in the bear hunting community, the minority of the bears taken are taken with hounds. Most of the bears taken are in conjunction with the deer seasons, and they are by hunters that aren't using hounds. So, and I understand also that there are groups, both local groups and out-of-county and out-of-state groups, that are fighting this issue because they are opposed to hunting. And I have no problem with people who are opposed to hunting. Just like I feel they should have no problem with me that enjoys hunting. I feel that it's each of our own decisions to make. I congratulate the board for bringing this up to public notice today. Last year I don't believe that was done, and yet there were some letters written from this board to the state on an official capacity, and I feel that this is the more appropriate manner in which to handle it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I have about three other requests to speak on this this item. Peggy Cotine, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Board. I'm Peggy Cote, and I live in the city of San Luis Obispo. I am involved with animal welfare groups, and we have many people in this community who are opposed to bear hunting. We're opposed also to using GPS devices on dogs' collars and also increasing the hunt above the 1,700 bear limit in the state. But specifically today I'm addressing your resolution, which I think is very fair, and you're only addressing bear hunting in this county, which makes sense. I have petitions signed by dozens and dozens and dozens of citizens from this community in our county who are opposed to bear hunting. Even the Tribune, our local paper, came out against bear hunting in their editorial on February 9th of this year. They state, "We continue to have serious reservations about a proposal by the State Department of Fish and Game to allow bear hunting in San Luis Obispo County, an idea that's been on the table three times in the past 3.5 years. For starters, we're disappointed that the agency has so far ignored repeated requests to schedule a local hearing. Fish and Game are just not giving the community a chance to speak out on this issue. So some of us have to speak out for the community ourselves, and we're addressing you. There are numerous groups in a coalition that sent a letter to Fish and Game. Many groups, many of which are in this county. So I am very pleased that your board took the initiative to begin the process of this resolution. Since I live in the city, I know at least 4 of the city council members are opposed to opening up bear hunting in this community. I don't know what the 5th's opinion is, and I hope you will pass this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green, followed by Jeff Kuiper, please.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and as you know, I'm not from Los Osos, but you often have a lot of people here from Los Osos during community forum. You don't usually have any Osos, but the Osos definitely have interests that should be represented here as well. Los Osos, of course, was named for a different species of bear. The grizzly bear was the one that occupied most of the lowland habitat in California at that time. They were driven to extinction in this state approximately 100 years ago, and much of the habitat has been reoccupied by the black bear. Different people can mean different things when they talk about viable population. But the definition of viable isn't necessarily a population you should start shooting. We have viable populations of all kinds of species in this county that are not regularly shot, or there isn't an open season on, including humans. And science can look at this from all different directions and has looked at this from all different directions. I would say if there's controversy, there's time to set this for an actual hearing and hear all sides of the issue. But I think the request in the letter is reasonable. This is to go to the Fish and Game for a decision that will be made April 21st. And it is something that I think most of the humans would support, the sending of this letter. You can define the people who actually go after these bears as a special interest group, I suppose. Most people live quite successfully with the bears. They don't do much depredating. If you look in the Fish and Game Code for the state of California, the only place bears show up as depredators is of beehives in San Bernardino and Riverside counties, where they can be taken by traps if they get within 150 feet of a beehive that is fenced and signed in those two counties. Other than that, they don't seem to have a role in this state as depredators. There's a considerable section about depredators in the Fish and Game Code, and that's the only place that the bear shows up, the black bear. Obviously, they get hit by cars occasionally, and that seems to be some people's benchmark of where you have an excess population. I would say we have not opened a season on domestic cats because domestic cats get hit by cars. And obviously we don't have an open season by moths or other creatures that end up in the grills of automobiles. Just the fact that the automobile is a depredator doesn't mean humans with guns also need to be depredators. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Kuiper, followed by Lindy Owen, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and Supervisors. My name is Jeff Kuiper. I'm the Director of Los Padres Forest Watch. We're a nonprofit conservation organization working to protect the Los Padres National Forest, including right here in San Luis Obispo County. And I'd like to start out with an apology. I may appear to be a little sleep-deprived this morning, and it's not that I'm not having a good time. It's just because we have a little seven-week-old at home, and he doesn't yet understand the virtues of a good night's sleep yet. So bear with me.
Give him a teddy bear.
Yeah, no pun intended. Sorry, that was bad. So we fully support the board's approval of this resolution. Last year, as has been previously mentioned, there was a similar proposal set forth by the state, and it was tabled by the Fish and Game Commission amidst widespread opposition, both at the county level and at the statewide level. The Tribune editorialized against the proposal last year as well as this year. We had more than 500 residents write comments in opposition to the bear hunting expansion plan last year. And as well as several of you wrote individual letters to the commission and the department as well. So there were many reasons for this widespread opposition, but the common denominator amongst all of them was this need for a local public hearing. If there's going to be a proposal that impacts a county specifically, such as this one, it seems reasonable to ask that there be a local public hearing on this issue here in San Luis Obispo County. Last year, I had to drive 6 hours to provide testimony at the commission hearing on this issue up in Lodi, and I was given a minute to speak. And so this year, the state seems to be following the same procedure once again, in that there's hearings scheduled in Sacramento, hearings scheduled in Ontario, and a hearing scheduled in Monterey. Again, no hearing scheduled here in San Luis Obispo County, where there's widespread interest in this proposal, and folks certainly have a stake here. So in January, after this proposal was tabled last year, the state proposed it again this year. It's not an issue of public safety. It's not an issue of protection of property. The state already has procedures in place to address those situations as they arise, and they really haven't arisen here in the county. There have been a few automobile collisions with bears on the Cuesta Grade, but I think that's more of an issue of an absence of a wildlife corridor underneath the highway rather than any sort of bear overpopulation issue. What we are dealing with, though, is the state trying to push through a misguided and scientifically unsound proposal with again, no regard for local public input.
Thank you, Mr. Kuiper.
So,
we gave you 3 minutes. See?
Thank you. So because of that, I would recommend and fully support that the board approving this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Lindy Owen, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Lindy Owen. I just, on the bear issue, I wanted to thank Supervisor Gibson for putting the recommendation forward, the resolution, and I support approval of it. I think it's a bear hunting and all hunting I'm opposed to. It is a violent and a cruel approach to wildlife balance, and I think that we have newer technologies that should be applied in cases where we do have overpopulation. And then I also wanted to speak to A2, if I could briefly, just to support that sounds like a good idea, Sunshine Week, Mr. Asajian. Thank you for presenting that. I would support that this board consider it be Sunshine Year and begin opening all, keeping everything open to the public. That was what we have all expected and hoped from you. So, thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Castle on A2, please.
Good Good morning, Board. I am Nancy Castle. I am a resident of Morro Bay, and my partner and I started AGP Video in 1996. It grew from a political activity. We were activists. We wanted to help government be better. We recognized that by coming and videotaping meetings, we had a greater chance of sharing, as Sunshine Week is about. It's about the public's right to know what the government is doing and why. We went from volunteering to come shoot the Board of Supervisors, no pun intended, when Jim Grant was still second in command, and then we got hired to continue to cover your meetings, and we very much appreciate it. Our endeavor was based in what's good for San Luis Obispo County, and more importantly, what's important to Morro Bay, because that's where I live. And so we started out covering all Fish and Game Commission meetings, and those can be seen live at calspan.org. And Steve, whom I wanted to represent, so I brought this mask of him that we did for his birthday this year, is in Eureka covering a Marine Life Protection Act initiative meeting that is also live on calspan.org. And we have grown to cover a wide variety of county meetings and state meetings, including the Coastal Commission, the marine-related meetings of Fish and Game, the Marine Life Protection Act Initiative, OPC. We also cover all of the Air Resources Board meetings, and we're going to start with the Delta Stewardship Council meetings, which could have an impact on San Luis Obispo County because they will be looking at the issue of state water, the Delta, and the San Francisco Bay issues. We distribute our work on Channel 21, as you well know, TV. We also have a website presence for San Luis Obispo County, which is slowspan.org, and we provide access to Health Commission, Zone 3, and the SLOCOG meetings, and we also archive those to the benefit of the community. We also send copies of all of our work to the local libraries. They aren't cataloged. If people are interested in seeing something, call the library, see if they have it. If it's not at your library, it may be at the San Luis Library. I appreciate your time. I appreciate the opportunity to serve you, and I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to serve the community as a whole by providing sunshine on government process. Thank you.
Thank you. Two requests to speak on A4, Pandora Nash Carner and Elizabeth Scott Graham, please.
Thank you, Honorable Board members, staff, members of the public. I'm Pandora Nash Carner. I'm here today as a member of the Board of Directors for the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden, and I'm here to thank you very much for your willingness to partner with us and your commitment to the environment. And I see what this item is going to be for this county and for the state is that you're taking a leadership role in showing other government entities, which then translates to home residences and businesses, how they can rip out their very water-demanding turf and replace it with drought-tolerant, beautiful, and functional gardens. We're very excited about the transforming of the courthouse into a series of drought-tolerant demonstration gardens, which will not only dramatically reduce the county's water use, but it will also be a great teaching tool for the visitors who come here, for people who walk by every day on their way to businesses or lunch or dinner. Today is very exciting for us because it's the first step in a series that I think will lead to these gardens hopefully being planted this year. And then phase two is we're going to start offering a series of courses, not only for government entities, but for residences and businesses alike out at the garden, to show other people how they can have beautiful, sometimes edible landscapes that will reduce their water usage, be sustainable, and will be with appropriate plant materials that are either Mediterranean or natives or both. So I want to thank you very much for your willingness to be partners with us.
Thank you. Elizabeth Scott Graham, please. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Scott Graham. I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo and have been involved with the San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden for 10 years. And I want to echo everything with a ditto that Pandora said. I think this is a great opportunity for this county to take a lead and in demonstrating to the public who walk by here all the time what they can do in their gardens using water-wise plants. And it's amazing that even in a city, you can create all kinds of habitat for animals. For example, you all know that there are problems with honeybees in California, well, around the nation, declining. And one of the functions of the pollinators is that we have, in urban habitats, we have urban bees, 1,500 species of urban bees in California. And they set up housekeeping in gardens in the city of San Luis Obispo. So there'll be all kinds of things and opportunities to teach the public about how even on a small residential lot you can create habitat while saving tons of water. So thank you very much for moving forward with this. We think that you're very visionary, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. I have another request on A2, Galen. Sorry, I cannot read the last name, so you'll have to help me out there. Good morning.
Good morning. Galen Ricard, Leywood Park. And I wanted to thank you for Sunshine Week, the proclamation. I wanted to especially acknowledge AGP Video and Charter, especially during the Ed Merrill years, and you for your wholehearted, longstanding support of Government Access TV. AGP has been a pioneering force in government access television in the county and throughout the state, and they've been a tour de force in videotaping, cable casting, and streaming government meetings and bringing the decision-making process into homes, computers, and libraries. A few years ago, I was asked to conduct some market research on televised government access at the marketplace, and found that our gavel-to-gavel government meetings coverage surpassed anything else available in the nation at the time, and that's probably truer today. Most cities and counties now televise government meetings, but you'd be hard-pressed to find anywhere else where so many meetings are not only played live, but replayed, archived, and placed in libraries. The unrivaled access we have here is due in large measure to Steve Matthew and Nancy Castle following their heart. As citizens, their almost maniacal passion for grassroots government access accidentally and happily grew into the business it is today. That kind of passion for government access is especially appropriate here in San Luis Obispo County, which is one of the most civically active and authentically grassroots-based communities you'll find anywhere. Thank you for wholeheartedly supporting this kind of access, transparency, and open decision-making. It instills trust and confidence in democracy and informs, enlightens, and empowers citizens to play a more active role in their communities and government, which makes our lives and our communities the better for it. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I have one last request on consent on A15. Kim Daniels, please.
Good morning, Board. Kim Daniels, General Manager, San Luis Obispo County Employees Association. And I want to start by saying my issue is not with the District Attorney Investigators Association. Nor is it with what their prevailing wage COLA played out to be this year. The numbers are what they are, and I have no dispute with that. What my concern is the appearance that certain groups get preferential treatment. And when I read the staff report, nowhere did it indicate the percentage of pension rate increase that the DAIA is picking up. My guess is it's around 50%, and it should be 50% like the rest of us have done. But we've already been there, done that. The group I represent did that over 2 years ago. We put our COLA forward when we had a 5.56% increase that was our share. And yet, last year we took no COLA whatsoever to avoid layoffs, but there were nobody in the law enforcement groups included in layoffs. The year before that, we got a 3% COLA that was redirected then after a year, so that we could reduce pension increases, and it was put into something that was non-pensionable. The appearance is, and the folks I represent are very bright, and they understand these things when they read the staff reports and when they read the MOUs, the appearance is that the group that I represent, which is the bulk of your county employees, are not valued as high. That's a very dangerous message for the board to be sending. So while I have no gripe with the DAIA, the DSA, or anyone else, I think you need to be consistent in how things are handled when you're looking at salary increases and in these economic times, where those salary increases go. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. That's my last request on the consent. Board members, Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd comment on A3.
Mr. Sajian?
Comment on A3.
Mr. Patterson?
A3 and A4.
And Mr. Gibson?
A3, A4, and I wonder if we could get Mr. Grant to comment on A15.
Yes, sir. And I just have a quick comment on A2, if I could. So I'll start with me. In addition to AGP, I want to we do appreciate all that you do. We also wanted to recognize the fact that we have KCBX that broadcasts live our meetings as well as Granicus. So we do have a variety of folks out there that are keeping an eye on us. So I just wanted to make that point. Mr. Sargent on A2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Radio always being with us, but seems like catching us in action has been a little more productive, so I do want to thank the AGP producers for their vision from many years ago. And regardless of where we go, you see the same faces following us and videotaping the entire operation from to Eureka down to San Diego and every place else, not just supervisors or coastal commissions, but as well as Fish and Game, has brought them home to us to be able to see it in action. So I really appreciate your efforts, Nancy, for all the hard work. And it was a calculated risk because there's a lot of cost. Just looking at your equipment and being called from one area to the other, not every supervisor's chamber has the facility as we do. But to see you folks go through those efforts and the people power that you have in place and the technicians, it's quite an operation. My hat's off to you.
They made us dress up better.
Yeah, here, here. That was reality TV before there was reality TV.
Okay, I'm going to start on A3, and I'm going to go to my left first, if I could. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to start by thanking Mr. Dasman for coming today. I appreciate your very considered comments, as well as those we received via email by Mike Whiteford. I think there are many, many sides to this question. And I remain convinced that it is not the right thing to do to expand the open hunting bear season here. I appreciate Mr. Kuiper's analysis. He's been very deeply involved in looking at the details. I guess I am a little bit puzzled, bordering on concerned with Fish and Game's logic that a population gets to a certain point that it's time to open a hunting season on them. I think if we look historically, the bear population was much greater than it is today, and I don't see the justification for an open season. We have had reports of a minimal amount of damage by bears and a few public safety instances, interactions between humans and bears, all of which, to my knowledge, have been benign in terms of damage to the human population. I think there are adequate plans in place to deal with problem bears, either by relocation or, if necessary, depredation, and as a last resort. I'd like to end by the thought that expressing my feeling that I am not against hunting in general. I think it is a perfectly legitimate pastime. I do have my concern, though, with the hunting of black bears. In so far as I can see, it is almost universally trophy hunting, and I do have difficulty cautioning that kind of activity. So with that, I urge my colleagues' support of the resolution before us.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank Supervisor Gibson for bringing this forward. The issue was raised last year, and the board as a whole didn't address it, but individually a number of us did write to the Fish and Game Commission about the issue. Simply then, there was not enough information to justify a hunting season based on overpopulation. And a considerable amount of study has been done since to establish better numbers on the bear population, but I concur with Supervisor Gibson that that alone is not enough of a reason to open a season on bear hunting. And I actually had a hunter come to me last year when this issue came forward. He goes out of the area to hunt bear. He lives in the rural area of the county, and it was his feeling that San Luis Obispo County simply did not have enough bear habitat to safely protect bears from hunting. He spoke to the issue of hunters coming in to the county from outside the area, bringing hounds in and really impacting the bear population here. He informed me that the allowable take on bear was a statewide take, and it didn't regulate it county by county, and his fear was that if we did open hunting in San Luis Obispo County, it would quickly decimate the population here. So he was opposed to it, being a bear hunter himself. And there was reference made to the bears hit on Cuesta Grade on 101, and I did want to say that Fish and Game, along with biologists from Cal Poly and Caltrans, have been working over the past couple of years determining where safe bear crossing or wildlife crossings could be on Highway 101 at the grade. And beginning this summer, they will start erecting fences along 101 to direct wildlife to safe undercrossings for 101. So hopefully we'll see a reduction in the wildlife strikes on 101 as a result of this effort, and that includes bears. So I'm definitely supporting the resolution before us today.
Mr. Sargent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, why aren't we requesting that Fish and Game hold a meeting, public meeting, here in our county to have access for our citizens to the hearing and have a say about it? I would have hoped that our first step would have been that request, no different than any organizations that we have that want to change something. I don't know about the number 1700. I'm not a hunter myself. Those who hunt for whatever reasons, that's within their legal rights to do so. I have no problem with that. I was wondering why they're holding, if the expansion was to be in our county, why the meetings are held in distance away to Monterey, to other areas, and why aren't we requesting that those public hearings impacting our county is not held here? And I would have loved to have seen a letter prior to this to request that we have a public hearing here locally to educate those of us need the education or help those who want to have a say about it locally.
Mr. Hill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, when I wrote a letter last year, under my own letterhead, opposing this expansion of bear hunting into our county, it was for much the same reason and requesting that there would be a hearing held in our county, and that has not happened. I think it's inexcusable for the Fish and Game to expand this without a hearing in our county. It's not that difficult for them to do. There's obviously a significant amount of public interest. Our resolution doesn't address the ethics of bear hunting or hunting opportunities or any of that. About a year ago, the NRC was scheduled to hold a meeting on, I can't exactly remember what subject, I think it was on the EIS process, and they were going to do it in between the two nuclear plants that operate in our state, in between San Onofre and San Luis Obispo, which would have created a kind of burden on people from both communities because they would have had to drive over 120 miles, and I spoke up and talked to the NRC about the need to have meetings in local areas, and they did. So to me, if an agency based in Washington, D.C. can come out and hold meetings for the public to interact with its regulators and to express its opinions, I don't know why an in-state Fish and Game can't hold a meeting in our county
based on this issue when all they've provided us is an acknowledgement that over 5 years there's been 5 incidences of damage connected to black bears. So I support the resolution wholeheartedly.
Okay, and I'll just weigh in just quickly, too. I was a hunter since I've been a little bitty kid. Gave it up after I got out of the Navy, but I have nothing against hunting. I think that it's a great outdoor sport in various instances. In this particular case, I'm also going to support the resolution. I just don't see the problem, and I think that there are the means to address the problem by the Fish and Game at this particular point. I, too, am a little bit bothered that they didn't take the time to at least hold a meeting down here, but maybe this letter would get their attention to the fact that next time they might need to. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I might suggest, assuming this passes, I wonder if your covering letter transmitting this resolution might include the request.
I suggest that. I was going to ask if that would be amenable to my colleagues, that we can accompany a letter.
Good last nation.
Okay, good. And let's see, A4, Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is indeed an exciting opportunity to see modern landscaping in action. It started actually with the interest of the Botanic Garden in the two small planters that surround the Volney Clock, which is on the corner of Osos and Monterey here, and quickly expanded outside those planters and out onto the area surrounding the old courthouse building. I think it's important for folks to know this is yet possibly a year or so away from going in the ground, but I think folks could eagerly anticipate this. Beyond being functionally desirable in terms of using less water, I think the key is that we are going to see a beautiful design worthy of the architecture of that building, and I think it really will be cutting-edge action on behalf of this county. So I thank the Botanic Garden for their interest in this. Thank also General Services, Ms. Pell, and Public Works was part of this conversation, and look forward to seeing this happen.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am excited about this opportunity. I've been in the water business in one form or another most of my professional life, and this is long overdue. It's an opportunity, certainly, for the county to walk its talk. California essentially has brought the water-intensive English style of landscaping to the western Mediterranean climate, and they're just not a good mix. And here we have an opportunity to take out water-intensive turf and put in something much more interesting and water-efficient and compatible with the environment in which we live. I'm looking forward to seeing the evolution of this garden. So thanks to the Botanical Garden and the county players that have made this possible.
Anybody else hear that noise?
Yes.
That driving you crazy?
No, sir. That's holding me outside.
Ben, is that you doing that? Okay.
Just checking.
just quickly, too, I think that this is a classic of, if we're going to talk the talk, we need to walk the walk, and I appreciate what you're doing over here in terms of lessening the water that's going to be required. It'll be a real interesting proposal, and I'm anxious to see this. So thank you for what you're doing there. Mr. Grant, could you please comment for us on A15?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Jim Grant, County Administrator. The item A15 is a resolution or two resolutions approving a memorandum of understanding with the District Attorney Investigators Association. And basically what this provides is that through negotiations and through the voter-initiated prevailing wage ordinance, it looks like this District Attorney Investigators Association is due a 4.15% increase for this year in compensation. This, again, is based on a voter-initiated prevailing wage ordinance, which we live under, which the board has to abide by, which we use to compare basically the salaries and benefits of our employees to the employees of similarly sized counties. come up with an average, and then if there's an increase, then that increase is due to those employees. And then that increase then is negotiated between our human relations folks, HR, and the employee association. In this instance, again, it's a 4.15% increase. Your board has been very adamant in directing staff that we also have a pension issue in that we have some unfunded liabilities and we have rising pension costs. Your board has directed staff to split those costs between the employee and the county 50-50, any increase in those costs. And so any negotiations now include that that provision that we go in and try to negotiate that 50-50 split. In this particular instance, this 4.15% increase is split in this manner. 3.385% goes to pick up pension costs. So the majority of the increase in there is going to pick up and pay for pension costs, and less than 1% goes to salaries in this case. So in terms of what Ms. Daniels is saying, I think this meets what her employees and what she is saying is that we need to take a look at this on a holistic basis, which we are, and asking employees to share in the pension rate increases. So with that, I'll leave it up to questions. Your board.
Do we have any other questions? With that, I entertain the motion to approve the consent.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Supervisor Gibson, seconded by Supervisor Patterson to approve the consent calendar item. And in addition to that, the accompanying letter requesting a meeting with the Fish and Game.
Hearing by Fish and Game in the county, yes.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
I'm going to vote yes. I still pass it on A3 because I think we should request that the meeting here locally prior giving them our opinion. So I'm going to vote no on that.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Okay, with that, we'll move into public comment. I have four requests to speak. And first one will be Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFatta. You don't all have to leave. We're just getting started.
LA's got to get back to work.
Turn the mic on.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, and it is a beautiful morning. I would first like to compliment not only Nancy Castle, but Steve Matthews for their opening up the public process to the members of the audience. By that I mean they are allowing people to see precisely how the different boards, as well as this board, operate and do not operate. That having been said, last Tuesday, I was summarily chastised for saying the RAC did not record vocally their meetings. I was wrong. I apologize. The head of Public Works, Paavo Ogren, also said on the outside in the entry, he did not have to report to this board. All he reported to the RAC. Pretty sad. And my opinion, this also is extremely wrong, because what is said at the RAC is not recorded publicly as the Matthews Castle presentation is done. Having said all of this, to keep up on the concerns of those in attendance as well as those in public, the board should review the RAC meetings and not depend on the RAC chairman to keep the board informed as to what the public is saying. When listening to the meetings, there are many comments from the different agency representatives to the RAC that should concern this board. These representatives are from agencies throughout the county and are as diverse as the agencies they represent. it might be revealing to this board if they were to watch these meetings or listen to these meetings, as they are extremely diverse and they have many bits and pieces of information that you do not normally hear. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. DeFatta.
Morning, Supervisor Ben.
Followed by Lindy Owen, please.
Finishing up with last week's comments, I said the people that come here week after week are not obstructionists. We come here to voice our concerns to you and the public that the high cost of this sewer project for Los Osos is unaffordable to many in the prohibition zone. We already know that Supervisor Gibson, Project Manager Ogren, and his staff are totally out of touch with what several thousand people in Los Osos can't afford. It's really simple. Just go back and look at the off-the-shelf, green, affordable alternative collection and treatment plants. It would be the right thing to do. First, you must fire Gibson and Ogren for the following reasons. Reason number 7, you already spent over $7 million to study the gravity collection component, something that has been designed and paid for with hard-earned taxpayers' money and lined the pockets of consultants personally tied to your staff. Everybody knows it. Reason number 6, you chose to take water paid for and owned by the people, exported it, and wanted to dispose of it by spraying it away in thin air, causing a greater shortage and more damage from saltwater intrusion. You all knew that. Reason number 5, you chose to buy 643 acres of good farmland when under 30 acres would have been plenty of land for a treatment site out of our basin, I might add, also. Reason number 4, you chose to use a bio-lac treatment plant without terrestrial treatment, a conventional energy hog-activated sludge producer. You all know that, and yet you chose to continue on. Reason number 3, you chose the gravity collection system, the most expensive way to transport household waste in the country, when better, cheaper alternatives are available. Reason number 2, you 4 were possibly deceived by Gibson and Ogren with their faulty information that no one wanted less expensive alternatives. Far from it. Reason number 1, using the same old questionable engineers and contractors is not the way to building a better sewer project. You had your chance, and your staff and Montgomery Watson, Harzar Carollo, have blown $7 million on top of 24 by the Montgomery Watson CSD did 7, 8, 9 years ago. It's been so long ago I've forgotten. I have here in my hand where Montgomery Watson Harzar is in deep voodoo. They are being accused of overcharging New Orleans millions of dollars with their contract for repairing the infrastructure after Hurricane Katrina. Montgomery Watson is also in deep doo-doo with shenanigans they did in Florida and other states. Gentlemen, is this the kind of people you want to do business with?
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Ms. Owen, please, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning again, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I, for probably the 40th or 50th time, want to bring up the issue of the problem of not doing a fair comparison between promised technologies and a promise of having a fair comparison. So what we have at this date is Montgomery Watson Harzar and Carollo and many of the same players that do other large projects in this county are headed towards what they figure is the winning gate. I don't think they're going to make it. I think Montgomery Watson Harzar is being investigated all over the United States right now for serious behavior that's exactly like what's happened in Los Osos beginning in 1998. And I think that they actually are, a subsidiary of Halliburton. I like to think of them as the Blackwater of Los Osos. They've done nothing but harm in our town. They've lied and they've manipulated data and they've won and wined and dined people. That's not how you choose a good public works project. And we got cheated in this process because Carollo and the same team that helped design the redo of this last bad sewer in Los Osos were on the panel that made the decision to throw out Lyle's Construction, who was in such a negative bidding arena, they were probably the only ones brave enough to come forward to propose the step design. Step design will protect our waters. It will cost estimated a minimum of half the price to install. It's more like a third. When there's spills, it will not be raw sewage going into our water supply. It will be treated, pre-treated effluent from our septic tanks that we would keep on our properties. You have to look at this. You cannot let this just keep rolling forward unless you want to wait till the courts take it over. I want to talk again about San Diego and last Sunday's paper. It looks like San Diego is allowed to pump 50 billion gallons of untreated sewage out into the Pacific Ocean. And the reason? They cannot afford to fix their plant or their collection system. And they have the gravity collection, too. It's all failing. The whole infrastructure in the United States that was built on gravity sewers is one big failure, and it's unfixable. So please don't do that to Los Osos, and please don't do it to other small communities that have to convert from septics to collection systems and treatment. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Michael Wynn, please.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham and supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn. I'm from Napomo. I just wanted to share very quickly some anecdotal evidence that you might consider. Currently, the conservation open space element is concluding the process to be updated, and one of the things in that is a discussion of distributed photovoltaic systems countywide as a way of providing the energy that we need in our homes. I looked at this from my own home several years ago. I checked out a number of companies. They were eager to do business. It didn't pencil out at the time. It would have cost me nearly 12 years to recoup the expenses that I'd put into the home. I looked at it again this year, and the time has dropped dramatically. The cost has plummeted. The recouping time is 5.5 years now, and it's something that my wife and I are going to go ahead and do. I only bring this to you because this is one of those policy issues that can change in 6 months dramatically. And yet we tend to update our elements every 5 years. So I would urge you to put that on a little tickle file and get an update periodically to see whether your policies in terms of converting your buildings to photovoltaic as a leader for the rest of the county might be appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. That concludes the public comment requests. We'll move into the board business. Madam Clerk, if you'd please introduce the first item.
Item D1, a consideration of a letter of intent to the Central Coast Water Authority Board of Directors to evaluate potential future exchange options of State Water Coastal Branch, all districts. It's recommended approval and instruction a person to sign.
Thank you. Ms. Howard.
Morning, Chairperson Meacham and fellow supervisors. Courtney Howard from the County Public Works Department, here to provide a brief presentation on this item, including and I have a PowerPoint. So. I'm going to go over on the State Water Project as well as direction your board gave staff in September, a local issue we're having in the area of the county, and recent coordination involving all of those items prior to looking at today's recommended action and anticipated future steps. A little background on the State Water Project. The San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, I'll refer to it as the district, has a contract for 25,000 acre feet a year of state water. Of that 25,000 acre feet a year, we have several agencies in our county as shown on the table here that have subcontracted with the district for certain amounts of that allocation called water service amounts. Consequently, when the facilities were built from the California Aqueduct, they were built sized to accommodate the 4,830 acre feet a year, and we entered into a contract with the Central Coast Water Authority, or CCWA, for treatment and conveyance of that amount. I'll also note that CCWA is the joint powers authority that represents Santa Barbara County users of state water and operates the treatment facilities for state water use on the Central Coast. A note to make for state water is that it's not always able to deliver 100% of the water service amounts to the subcontractors in the county. In order to address that, most of them have entered into what are called drought buffer agreements for an additional additional amount of our allocation in order to get up to their water service amounts, even in years when the state water project is cut. So accounting for the water service amounts for each agency and the drought buffer water reserved by the agencies, the county still has an excess allocation of 8,300 acre feet a year. Since the late 90s, we've been using that as reliability, additional reliability water for the state water users in the county. And at the time, the board at that time adopted some excess allocation use policies, and one of which was that there was no permanent transfers or sales outside the district prior to an update of our countywide master water plan. And so that brings us to the present, where in September we came to your board and gave you an update on the progress of that master water plan, and a component of which is doing an analysis of the state water excess allocation and optimizing the use of the coastal branch for state water. And there were some concurrent efforts that would need to be done in order to adequately analyze all those options. So we sought direction from your board to work with our local agencies, including the subcontractors in the RAC, as well as the CCWA, on looking at the different options for use of the coastal branch and our excess allocation. Shortly after that, we received a letter from the Northern Cities Management Area Technical Group, or NCMA, as I'll refer to them, regarding a request for additional state water to be delivered. The map here shows the area of the NCMA and the agencies within it and that we received letters from. Basically, their monitoring program results were indicating that seawater intrusion may be occurring in the area of the red arrow there. And they were seeking, as a short-term measure, to offset groundwater pumping in that area to have additional state water delivered to the agencies that take state water in that NCMA area. So that would be above our 4,830 acre feet a year and would require use of CCWA's capacity. So in discussing, coordinating with all the agencies and CCWA, we've been talking about both the short-term issue with the NCMA as well as the long-term use of the Central Coast branch. And the next step for the addressing the NCMA request in particular is CCWA Operations Committee ended up meeting to discuss it, and generally they were supportive of meeting NCMA's request, but they wanted assurance from our county that we would indeed be looking at optimization options for this coastal branch. And in particular, they're looking at the idea of a capacity for allocation exchange. And the next step for the CCWA in considering the NCMA request is their board of directors meeting on March 25th. So as such, we have our recommendation today in order to provide them reassurance that the option of capacity for allocation exchange will be included in the master water planning process in looking at all of the options for our excess allocation of state water. We're recommending that your board chair send a letter to CCWA's board of directors indicating as such prior to their March 25th meeting.
Thank you, Courtney. Quick question in regard to when the state cuts back on water supplies, which they just do it basically across the board, what effect does this have in this arrangement?
The arrangement to meet NCMA's needs? Well, we would have to get at least at about 19% deliveries from the State Water Project, we can get our full 4,830 acre feet a year. And so above that, we'd have excess allocation to put to use or deliver to the NCMA.
So it really doesn't have any effect?
Unless it was very low, but okay. We anticipate it being 35 to 45% this year.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Howard, any negotiation agreement that we have with CCWA, it's my understanding from the staff report that we would be not committing beyond a year at a time any excess allocation that we have. In other words, we do have an opportunity to revisit this on an annual basis.
For addressing the NCMA request, that's one of the one of the direction it seemed to be heading was a short-term agreement to meet their needs as they're addressing their drought conditions.
Right, and as I read the proposed excess entitlement policies, we are just going to have ongoing conversations with them about that, and that it would be, again, a commitment no longer than a year at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Courtney for doing a really excellent job of coordinating meetings that Supervisor Saja and I have been part of with mayors of South County cities, engineers and city managers as well, and Mr. Ogren and others to bring this forward. We've had quite a few meetings. The problem's understood, and I think that it's been handled very well.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. With that, I have three requests to speak. Mr. Green, followed by Michael Wynn.
I'm Eric Greening, and we did discuss this at the RAC. Obviously, there has been excellent coordination because each jurisdiction came up with the same letter. But obviously,
you noticed that too.
Obviously, they are speaking from a real need. They are speaking from a serious issue of saltwater intrusion. You're used to hearing folks from Los Osos talk about it, but it is a countywide threat where it isn't an established countywide problem. And at the RAC, we had some discussion about what is the extent of the county's ability or authority over saltwater intrusion, but obviously you have the authority to act on the threat because you're doing so right now. We're not necessarily unanimous in our opinion of the ultimate reliability of the State Water Project, but the RAC was unanimous in wanting to send a letter and wanting to investigate the allocation as part of the update of the Master Water Plan. We obviously don't have the data to make conclusions about it, but we definitely all believe it needs to be looked at and that the Central Coast Water Authority should hear that we as a county are concerned about the issues in the South County and hope that they can get it addressed. Ultimately, we are still in the role of petitioners too. Every so often the question gets raised, why isn't our county represented on the CCWA board? Why isn't it participating in their board meetings and their operating committee meetings? Obviously, we often have someone there. I guess Pavo is usually there, but not with voting power. And occasionally, we ask that question, and then we forget we asked it. And for about two decades now, they've been operating without us having voting representation on the board. I guess I'm asking that question again. Is it a discussion that we should be having? But in any event, I do support conveying our interest. I think, though, that long-term, we need to recognize that this may not be as reliable a source as it was sold to us a couple of decades ago. Obviously, many years, most years, it's delivering less than 100%. If the sea level is rising, then we have a real problem because the Clifton Court Forebay could start pumping brackish water and ultimately salt water. And the other thing just over the horizon The current contracts expire in 2035. We don't know whether they would simply be renewed as is, renegotiated, or what. We just know that the coastal branch is 3% of the project and may not weigh very heavily in the discussions with the big players. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Wynn, followed by Gwen Taylor, please.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Wynn from Napomo again. We do appreciate the effort to coordinate additional deliveries of Schedule A water by the CCWA pipeline. Oceano is in the beginning of what could become a very major crisis. A number of things have contributed. You're all aware of the drought that we've suffered. What you may not understand as clearly is that the ag interests to the east of there have become farmed much more intensely over the last few years. And as a result, Los Barros Creek, which once was free-flowing, was a recharge to this area, no longer carries water most of the year. And so the problem is not going to go away. I think these negotiations are a very positive step to try to find at least an interim solution. The only thing I would say on the behalf of Napomo CSD is that you would remember that we also would like to play some small role along the, down the line, as it were. The subcontractors in the county that are already taking water definitely are our first priority. No problem there. At some point, though, we might like to work with you to coordinate some additional Schedule A water so that Santa Maria would have a more reliable supply for us through the pipeline that we're in the process of funding and constructing. So if you'd keep us in mind as a on down the line, we would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Gwen Taylor, please.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a little surprised at how long this took since the letters were sent from the different communities. Four letters sent at different dates, and yet three of them were in November, and one of them was in December, and that makes it 4 months since you gentlemen have received these. Saltwater intrusion is not just in Los Osos, as you are hearing. The four communities that you are allowing to obtain additional state water is from a pipeline that they have available for state water. We in Los Osos do not have any viable use of water other than our own. With this being said, it would seem prudent for this board to be more conscious and more proactive in addressing the saltwater intrusion in Los Osos. It is not just that we are in a saltwater intrusion problem. As was said by Mr. Wynn, Oceano is using more water because of their agriculture. Los Osos, on the same vein, is using more water because there is more agriculture, more how properties that are being used for hothouses, more properties that are being developed using water. In the past, it was dry farming. Now it is farming that is taking water. And because of this, it is important that saltwater intrusion be addressed now. I commend you for addressing this problem with the four communities along the coastline, because there are other coastline properties, residents, communities, that also are seeing saltwater intrusion, and that is up north in San Simeon, and their saltwater intrusion is a problem in Morro Bay, and we in Los Osos, and then you have four additional communities that are addressing saltwater intrusion. This is not a phenomenon that is going to go away. It is something that needs to be addressed on a holistic basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. It's my last request to speak on this item. Without question, I think, and I'll let Mr. Ogren, if you want to respond to any of the points.
Chairman Meacher, members of the board, Pablo Ogren, Public Works Director. Just real quickly, Mr. Greening brought up a couple of comments. One was regarding representation on CCWA. He He is correct that the contracts that were originally established with CCWA and the Flood Control District back in the early 1990s does not have the district on any of the boards of CCWA. I was a relatively younger professional at that point in time, but my recollection of those negotiations were we also don't pay administrative charges associated with CCWA, so we're purely a contractor, and the members and the agencies in Santa Barbara County pay for the administration of CCWA. Our attendance at those meetings is primarily on an as-needed basis, if you will, and Ms. Howard and others have been doing most of them. I actually haven't been down there very much lately. He also questioned the issue of 2035 and renegotiation of the state water contracts since the existing contracts expire in 2035. And I think that individuals who and agencies that are contractors of state water should have some assurance. There is a provision in California water rights that's called development rights. In essence, those who help pay for the development of the project get the water rights. And so even though the contracts or the operations may change after 2035, those who are getting the water and who have allocations right now should have all the confidence that that will continue as well after 2035. In fact, that particular point on development and who pays for the development of the water rights, it was really critical in the Santa Maria groundwater litigation for the NCMA, because Lopez, and to the extent that Lopez helps to recharge that portion of the groundwater basin up in the Five Cities area, and only people in Five Cities paid for it. Nobody else, you know, it was special taxes of the Five Cities area that helped pay for Lopez, and therefore that was a significant consideration in the Santa Maria groundwater basin, preserving that water for the NCMA. But in any case, with respect to Mr. Wynn and future coordination with NCSD, Santa Maria, and that's certainly part of the plan on the master water plan to make sure that our most southerly agencies in the county are addressed in coordination with Santa Barbara County. And then with respect to the speaker from Los Osos, asking your board to be more proactive with regard to the seawater issue, I don't know how your board could be more proactive than addressing the wastewater project. If the wastewater project doesn't get implemented, it is just impossible to foresee how they will ever get that groundwater basin back into balance. So certainly, you know, your board's direction to staff, both respect on that project itself as well as the ISJ and trying to work with the purveyors in Los Osos is really, a lot of positive efforts forward in trying to address that water supply situation there.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ogren, do you, regarding representation on the CCWA, this may be an appropriate time to bring up that discussion again about representation for San Luis Obispo County. You mentioned that currently we don't pay an administrative fee, and if we did have representation, we would be required to do that. Do you have any idea what that cost would be?
Supervisor Patterson, no, I don't know what the cost would be, but I do think that this is the time to look at the issue, because if there is any changes in the contracts with CCWA with regard to allocations or pipeline capacity, then those changes to the contracts should really address all of the issues. It's sort of like a one-time opportunity to look at the efficiency of the project as well as the administration and the operation. So I think that that is a good issue that we can be addressing as well as we proceed on the Master Water Plan. And I forgot to thank Courtney myself. Certainly she's been doing a tremendous job in working with all of the agencies, South County, North County, everybody, with respect to the big picture efforts that she's leading.
Would this be an appropriate time then to add a comment in our letter to them?
I'd rather see an administrative cost relative to this before we do that.
Well, just suggesting that we have the conversation about that.
Yeah.
Your board's discretion, certainly, there will be a lot of details that were addressed. The letter itself addresses sort of big issues that CCWA
opens it up
wants,
for that opportunity.
Yeah, and it opens it up for many other issues to be addressed.
I would just say for the letter to be silent on it, and then, if we have direction or interest on the part of the board to have that conversation, I think it would be good to communicate that to CCWA. The other issue that you mentioned that I'm curious about, you mentioned the current contracts expiring in 2035 and California water law giving us essentially the the rights to that water, and I'm curious, would the rights be for the 25,000 acre feet that we have subscribed for, or would it be for the 5,000 that we've actually taken, or the 5,000 we've taken plus the 5,000 that we've purchased as a drought buffer? I mean, where are we with that? Because I think that's an important consideration.
You know, Supervisor Patterson, certainly the devil's always in the details, right? And that issue has one that, you know, there's a lot of different complexities to California water rights, including putting water to beneficial use. So the argument that would be against us in 2035 is that we haven't put our entire allocation to beneficial use. What we've done through board policies, through the Master Water Plan, is to illustrate and to establish facts that our excess allocation is being put to beneficial use through improving reliability. And so beneficial use can be established in many different ways. That has always been a concern of ours with, you know, what about the excess allocation? So both the sales to Santa Barbara County over the last couple of years, the drought buffer agreements, the Master Water Plan, it's very important that we show that we're using that excess allocation, putting it to beneficial use, so that when 2035 comes along, we can continue to rely on that, especially for reliability purposes.
So beneficial use is the benchmark, and there's a variety of ways to define that, I guess.
Yeah, and so, you know, again, that's something we need to be very concerned about, and establish facts and track record that we are, in fact, utilizing the whole 25,000, whether reliability or direct deliveries.
Thank you.
Have any other requests to speak or lights on at this time, but I can tell you that it was interesting to see the comment made that state water delivery is not 100% reliable. That was the very reason why we focused so strongly on the Nascano Water Project. Was it expensive? Yes. Was it necessary? Absolutely. And so I think in time, I hope that we can craft some means by which we capture all of our different water supplies and be able to wheel that wherever it's needed. And it's going to take a collaborative effort by all jurisdictions to be able to do that. So with that, I would entertain a motion on this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
As Mr. Hill mentioned, I also would like to thank staff. They went through a lot of figures and meetings and communications, not just locally, but with the folks in Santa Maria as well. So thank you. With that, I'll move we approve staff's recommendation.
Second. It's been moved by Supervisor Assayan, seconded by Supervisor Hill, to go with staff's recommendation to send this letter. Roll call, please.
Mr. Assayan?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Madam Clerk, next item, please.
Next item is C1, a hearing to consider a resolution amending the land use ordinance, coastal zone land use ordinance, and local coastal plan relating to grading and stormwater management in order to comply with the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 2 requirements. Item was continued from March 2nd, 2010, and they're requesting to receive and file the status report, provide staff direction on requested clarifications, and continue hearing to April 13th.
Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Cami Griffin, County Planning. We are here today to provide you with a little bit of a status update on the grading ordinance amendments to assure ourselves that we understood your previous direction from the past couple of hearings. In addition, there are just a couple of typographical kinds of changes that if we can get your agreement on those today, it will help us prepare the ordinance before the next hearing. And then most importantly, to continue the hearing to April 13th for a more robust discussion. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Michael Conger and Murray Wilson.
Good morning, board members. Murray Wilson, planning staff. And with that introduction, Ms. Griffin actually went through our first two slides here this morning. So in an attempt to make this presentation brief, we'll get here through the first couple, if you wouldn't mind, Annette. Thank you. So I'm going to go ahead and jump real fast past this outline slide. We do have three items of discussion, and that was exactly what Cami mentioned here. So on to the first item, being the board consensus. Staff heard from the last board meeting a few items that we believe you made, got to consensus on, and we're going to run over those here real quickly. The first one was related to the threshold for agricultural grading, And I'm clarifying that the cubic yards, 50 cubic yards is a non-cumulative threshold, which would be applicable to agricultural grading activities. The second item that we believe your board came to consensus on was with regards to the five-year dormancy period for ongoing crop production exemption. Important note on this one, we'll bring it up here once again, is that the only implication on this is that if you were to do grading activities, which do not include things such as disking, tilling, and those other sorts of typical agriculture operations, the repercussions of this would simply be filing a form for grading on slopes of less than 30%. Additional consensus we believe your board came to was the one-acre threshold for vegetation removal. And associated with that consensus, we heard that that would be applicable to all vegetation, not just native vegetation, and that this standard would be applicable to all activities with exemptions to be determined based upon the meeting that we'll be having on Thursday with the Farm Bureau and some other related interests. Further, we heard consensus to defer the item of biosolids to the existing biosolids ordinance and to allow biosolids to be simply regulated by that ordinance. And finally, to continue to have the Ag Commissioner retain review for agricultural ponds and roads for agricultural activities. Staff also believes, so this goes on to our second item on the outline that we briefly looked at there. We believe we got direction on the following items, and this is what we want to make sure that we have clear. So when we come back in April, we have a good starting point and hopefully can wrap up these hearings on the grading ordinance. With that being said, your board gave us direction, we believe, to research certification programs that would be appropriate for use in our agricultural certified grading program. To come back with recommendations for activities that we currently list under alternative review to be considered as certified grading. To come back with recommended eligibility criteria for both landowners and contractors to be used for the certified grading program. And to also work with the interest groups on coming to consensus on the remaining items related to agricultural grading. And once again, I'll just make note that we do have a meeting scheduled at 10:30 with the Farm Bureau coming up 2 days from now on the 18th. And last three items that we heard direction from your board on was to research resource agencies' involvement in the permitting process for vegetation removal, to develop a framework for users' guides for both development and agricultural grading activities, and to request a deadline extension from the regional board related to our March 23rd deadline to have these ordinances adopted. On that note, I would like to bring it to your attention to the board that staff has been in contact with the local regional board office and gotten a verbal extension from their office to go ahead and move forward with our hearings. They've identified that they do believe we've been making good progress on these hearings and that we are showing good faith in completing the ordinance amendments. With that being said, I'm going to pass it over to Michael for some clarification language.
Good morning, Michael Conger, County Planning staff. There are 14 clarification items. Most of these were referenced in the March 2 staff report. They came from a variety of sources, including county agencies, members of the public, and members of the agricultural community. And they're all listed in the present staff report, so I'll go through these pretty quickly. The first item is to clarify that cultivation activities are not grading, and that would go in the threshold section. And then also mention that even if a threshold is triggered, there are still agricultural exemptions. So even if you go beyond 50 cubic yards, you can still qualify for an exemption. With regards to the ongoing agriculture exemption, some of the clarification items would be to specifically include repair and restoration of existing fields as an allowed grading activity. To specify that grading under this exemption is not just for cultivation activities, it's also for things like recontouring fields. To specify that grazing lands that exit the Conservation Reserve Program can qualify in addition to the five-year dormancy period. So if a grazing land has been dormant for 10 years and is just coming out of a Conservation Reserve Program, they can continue to apply under the ongoing agriculture exemption. And then also to specify that the exemption includes hobby ranching. Right now, as far as the grazing exemption goes, it specifically says commercial grazing exemption. And so we would be looking to remove that word. With regards to restoration, there was a request to clarify the stream bank restoration requirements. When is it exempt versus when is it required alternative review? There was also a request to move upland restoration activity from alternative review to agricultural grading, which is the filing of a form. With regards to enforcement, we wanted to specify that the remedy for failing to file an agricultural grading form is to file the form after the fact, and that applies if this is the only violation on the property, is that you failed to file that form. As far as erosion control goes, we wanted to clearly specify that agricultural activities which are exempt or fall under the alternative review program don't require an erosion and sedimentation control plan for review and approval by the county planning department. And then there's a few administrative items. First, we need to change the reference of the California Code of Regulations to the California change the reference of the California Administrative Code to the California Code of Regulations as the name has changed. We wanted to replace the exemption language for agriculture in the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Program with language that exists in Title VIII, the Illicit Discharge Ordinance. We wanted to add a note that even though a project might be exempt, any work in the county right-of-way may require an encroachment permit. And then finally, we would restore a few elements of the purpose statement that are in the existing ordinance, and that was based on some testimony we received at the March 2 hearing. And staff concurs with all of these proposed clarifications and modifications. So with that, staff's recommendation is that your board receive and file this report, provide direction on those 14 requested clarifications, and continue this hearing to April 13th. And that concludes our presentation.
Patterson. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Conger, under restoration item 8, the upland restoration outside of a stream channel, it could be done by filing the agricultural grading form instead of going through a more extensive alternative review. Comparing that with a stream bed restoration, which would require permits from other resource agencies. I'm curious to know any regulatory jurisdiction over the upland restoration. I mean, how would we know that what's being recommended and carried out is actually blessed or endorsed by any other resource agency that might have jurisdiction over that?
Well, for the most part, upland restoration would occur outside of the stream channel, and the stream channel triggers the jurisdiction of several state and federal agencies. The only resource agency I can think of off the top of my head that might get triggered would be the regional board if the site disturbance exceeded an acre, in which case they'd need to either be under the agricultural waiver program or would need to do a stormwater pollution prevention plan.
Well, when you speak about stream bank restoration or the stream channel, are you including the riparian area outside of the channel? Is it the riparian corridor, or is it simply what's within the stream banks itself?
Oh, it's not really defined, but the exemption for stream bank restoration applies when you have another resource agency doing the permitting. So if you were working in the channel as defined by the Department of Fish and Game and you needed a stream bed alteration agreement from that agency, then you'd fall under that exemption because you were going under that agency's permitting process.
Okay. Item number 10, the erosion and sedimentation control. Agricultural activities that have an exemption or alternative review shall be exempt from preparing an erosion and sedimentation control plan, and the question becomes how do we ensure then that proper best management practices are being implemented to control erosion if they're exempt from that? Is it because they have gone through alternative review? Is that where BMP's best management practices would be defined and required?
Well, in our current ordinance, an erosion and sedimentation control plan is never required if you don't trigger a grading permit. So if you're not filing a grading permit, If you qualify under one of the exemptions or for alternative review, there's no erosion sedimentation control plan review from the county. And that was overlooked when the language was rewritten to include site disturbance in that. So we were exempting agricultural activities more or less because they are exempt today from this requirement. On top of that, we'll be researching a lot of these certification programs that a lot of people testified to in March 2, including the sustainability in practice and the self-assessment for ranching sustainability. We'll look into those programs and see exactly how they meet the erosion control criteria and report back to your board on April 13th.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And if I could add real quickly, additionally on that item, that's where the form has really come into play. The county plan department sees that form as our opportunity to, for these exempt activities, to put the landowner on awareness that there may be other permitting agencies. So once again, it goes back to that disclaimer on the form that you should be contacting other resource agencies if you believe they may have jurisdiction over your project.
Thank you.
I have no other lights on at this time. I have no request to speak. Everybody's just happy right now.
Okay. Maybe we should adjourn, Mr. Chairman.
Bring it back to the board for further discussion. Mr. Gibson.
Well, at the risk of spoiling the mood, in fact, I think we've made a lot of progress. I had a very productive meeting with Farm Bureau staff and board president, and I think we're heading in the right direction. Just speaking to Mr. Patterson's issue, question about upland restoration, I think that's the perfect place where a certified program comes into play. That would, assuming we're out of the stream bed where we know there's lots of regulatory oversight, we get into the upland areas. If the activity triggers is of substantial extent and amount, and we're operating and we have a certified program, I think we can have some confidence that the activities are going to be conducted in the right way. And so as we move forward, I just again like to comment, I think the key to understanding here is the user's guide that staff is committed to produce, where we list the common activities that we that our agricultural community engages in, and we can plainly see what level of permit or regulation is going to be required, if any. And I had a brief conversation with Ms. Griffin yesterday in terms of a couple of ideas there. One of the key improvements we can make is the clarity of this grading ordinance. And I think we should try to simplify the different levels of review. We have things that are not grading, and people can proceed apace. We have, common agricultural practices that will be exempt, and people can proceed apace. Let me just jump over the middle ground and go to the far end of the spectrum, is the idea that you would need alternative review or a grading permit. And again, the more I think about it and the more I hear about it, the more it occurs to me that alternative review or a grading permit are not so different one to the other. It's just a different agency, a different approach to it, but they are extensive processes. And so one of the things I suggested to staff, and we'll see whether is a good idea or not, I suppose, is to take all those activities that are either not grading or exempt, take them off the table. But all the other activities nominally might be subject to alternative review or a grading permit, except that we might be able to find a great number of those that could be allowed under a certified program. So I think that the impetus here is to really dig in and see what certified programs work. And to me, the filing of the form, I think the use of a certified program should be tied to the filing of the form. I think that that it would be a good idea to sort of structure this so that if you're filing a form, what you're doing is you're certifying to the county that you are complying with some set of standards through a certified program. What we need to do now, I think, is dig in and see what programs are out there that the county could recognize as having the substance to allow us to have confidence that activities conducted under those programs would be done well. And we talked a little bit about some logistics of creating an attachment to the ordinance that would list those programs that we recognize. One of the things that I'd be interested in discussing with staff, with the Farm Bureau and other ag interests is to look at different programs to be sure that they have the consistency of intent with our grading ordinance, is to keep soil where soil's supposed to be, not letting it run off a site and into a creek, and that those certified programs do have specific best management practices that we can rely on. So again, that's sort of a long-winded thing to say that I think we have a framework here, and now it's really a matter of putting those agricultural activities into the right slot in the framework, and I think we're going to have something that's going to work pretty well. I look forward to working with folks to see how that goes.
But anything at all, if it's going to be incorporated into this to make it more simplistic and make it easier to understand, I'm all for it. This gets a little bit complicated. I'm still a little bit uneasy and unsure of the 50-yard and the 5-year issue. I'm not quite sure if I'm there yet, and I'm anxious to hear back from the other agencies to see if, in fact, this is going to fit with them. But at this point, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, along these lines, Mr. Chair, I just received a flyer last week that the county and the Resource Conservation District is sponsoring a short course for erosion control and sediment reduction, and they actually will be held here in the Government Center on Friday, March 26th is day one, and on Thursday, April 1st is day two of this course, and it's $25, and it's for landowners, contractors, developers, planners, engineers, and agency staff. And you can contact the Upper Salinas Las Tablas RCD for specifics. So it's the beginning of that, or a continuation of the education program about controlling soil erosion and sedimentation. So I'll hand this off to Joy, who's in the audience, to get this out to her constituents.
Okay. I don't know if we need anything further other than this is a receive and file.
Motion to continue this hearing until April 13th.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to continue this to April 13th. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. And just for your information as well, I think on the 24th, I'm going to be going over to Fresno to listen to the future of the Williamson Act and what's going to be happening with that. I thought that would be something that would be important to hear. Madam Clerk, do we need to take a break, Mr. Asajian?
I was thinking we can do that. I see some activities out there. We might take a short break, and or we can always approve the resolutions if that's what you need to.
I do need to do that.
And or go to closed session first, whatever, however you should. But in your, while we're...
Let's do this.
If we take a little break, I can communicate better and come back with some information for you.
Let's do this. Let's take... I'd entertain a motion to approve the
presentation.
Approval,
sir.
Second. Moved and seconded. All in favor? Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. We're going to take a break. I'm sorry. Do we need a
resolution?
It's a resolution. I'm sorry. Roll call. Mr. Asajian and Mr. Gibson.
Aye.
Yes.
What? I thought Mr. Chair was...
Okay, be kind to the clerk, boys.
So is it Asajian and Gibson or
yes.
Patterson? Okay. Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. We're going to take 10 minutes, and then we'll be back, and we'll make this presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We are going to adjourn to closed session, and then we will come back after closed session and make the presentation. Mr. Jensen?
Approximately 45 minutes.
45 minutes. Okay. We will be back here, hopefully, right around 10:40. Thank
11.
You.
Or
okay, we are back from closed session, and Mr. Jensen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board did meet in closed session. No reportable action was taken.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to move into the final business item for today, which is a presentation, and I will turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Asajian.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It gives me great pleasure to read this resolution, not just as a county supervisor, but also as a member of the Advisory Council for the Wellness Community. Hereby the resolution declaring March 26 as the Wellness Community Day and recognizing the Wellness Community California Central Coast's third anniversary in San Luis Obispo County. The following resolution is hereby offered and read, and we would like to invite the representatives up front to the podium to accept this resolution, and we'll give you a minute or two to say a word or two. As I read the resolution, whereas the Wellness Community California Central Coast has an official 501c3 nonprofit status and independent charter of the national organization, the Wellness Community National, will celebrate its third anniversary on March 26. And whereas the founders and board of directors of the Wellness Community California Central Coast have demonstrated profound leadership in their vision to establish the Wellness Community California Central Coast and provide hope, education, and support to cancer patients and their loved ones, all free of charge in San Luis Obispo County. The Wellness Community California Central Coast provides the highest quality emotional and social support and is supported by a network of nearly 50 local affiliates, more than 100 satellite locations, as well as online. And whereas the Wellness Community California Central Coast serves the cities and communities of San Luis Obispo, Santa Margarita, Creston, Tascadero, Paso Robles, Shandon, Templeton, Parkfield Heritage Ranch, and Cambria. And whereas the leadership provides invaluable vital care and support, all free of charge to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. Now, therefore be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors thus hereby declare March 26th as Wellness Community Day and recognizes the Wellness Community California Central Coast third anniversary in San Luis Obispo County. With that, if would you like to come forward and accept the resolution on behalf of the Board of Supervisors? Thank you. And what we'll do, have you all come forward and for a pose for the picture, so that we're our official photographer doesn't have to rush. Okay, thank you. Good to see you.
We missed you.
Thank you.
Bruce,
how are you?
Why don't we back up here?
We
made 30 grand.
Oh, wow. Okay. Bruce, my shucks.
Okay, crowd over this way if you would.
Not only that, you have to hold this. Be sure it's the right side up.
Bruce has got it.
Jim, have you come this way so we have an equal...
There we go.
Are we okay?
Work with me, work with me. Smile.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are we down to clear?
Right.
Thank you.
We're
happy.
Thank you very much, guys. Take care of
everyone
today.
Thank you.
If anybody person will say a word, we have 40 seconds.
40 seconds.
40
seconds.
I really want to thank the Board of Supervisors for recognizing the wellness community, for the service that they do, a service that they couldn't do without your support. With six satellites now and our main facility in the North County, 3 years in operation with all donated funds, and we've been able to serve hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are cancer survivors, spouses, children, brothers, sisters, and loved ones. It's a phenomenal service. The community has been good to us. The community is deserving, and I'm proud to be a part of that as a founder and as a board member. And again, on behalf of all of us, thank you so much. Thank the county for all that you do for us, and hopefully we're giving back. Thank you.
Please come join us for cake.
Okay, we stand adjourned to cake. Thank you very much.
Good cake.